Welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Dusty White, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune of Cormdale Church and Pastor Chris Himmelman of First City Church. On Wednesdays, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're talking about right-wing evangelicals.
We'll get to that in a minute. First of all, we want to celebrate the return of snacks to the Wednesday Conversation.
Man, back.
Beautiful.
And better than ever.
Better than you expected, Chris.
Better than I expected when I walked in.
We need to give credit for two listeners. Veronica sent us four different kinds of healthy snacks.
Handmade.
There's some beef jerky. There's some dried apples. There's some cookies that I think are gluten-free, almond flour.
Mm-hmm.
I just know my wife handed them to me and she was like, I can eat these. So that's good news. And then we have the healthy side of the table of like snacks that actually might, you know, help you. And then there's the unhealthy snacks, which are JoJo's from Trader Joe's.
So good.
These are the Trader Joe's version of the Oreo. And the way this is from Becca, who is on our staff team at Cormdale. She asked me, hey, do you like Oreos? And I said, yes, I do. And
she said,
have you ever had the Trader Joe's version of Oreos? And I was like, I don't think I have. And she said, I'm getting you some. They're better. They're superior.
Whoa. Better
than Double Stuff? I think she's right.
I agree.
Chris agrees. I agree. Wow. I think they are better than Oreos.
I don't know. We'll see.
Trader Joe's does. They do a thing and they're like, we're gonna do it better. So thank you to listeners Veronica and Becca for blessing us with snacks. Thanks to my colleagues here. You know, one of the things I want to do, I just want to get better at what we do. I like just trying to always improve. And there's a few things I'm just going to try to get better at. One is I realize sometimes my brain is working fast, and so I just talk really fast on this podcast. So I'm going to try to slow down a little bit, hopefully not in ways that are like boring to listeners, but try to be a little more patient as we work through our conversation. The other thing is when I'm reading an article, I realize that I keep saying he says or she says like 700 times because I want you to understand that it's the article writer that's saying that, not me. And that just gets really overwhelming.
Bob, has anyone ever accused you of not being clear?
No, not necessarily.
Yeah, because you're like the clearest communicator I know.
I know, but I'm also very self-critical. I like to figure out like, how can I get even better? How can I be even more clear? So I'm just always always trying to improve. So we want part of what we try to do on this podcast is to help Christians, as Dusty said in the intro, talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. One of the things that means for listeners, especially in the American context, is that we're always talking about things that affect the church. And in America, because it's a very Christianity-inflected culture, what's going on in and around the church always has effects on the broader national dialogue as well. And that's the case with our topic today, the right-wing evangelical. This is a topic teed up by an article Jake Medor wrote at Mere Orthodoxy at the end of last month, January 31st. And he's just identifying something sociologically within the church that I thought, yeah, that's actually interesting. I think he's right about that. I think that's there. I think we should talk about it. And so I'm just going to summarize the observation he's making and I think try to help Christians think about, okay, what do you do as you come across the category of people he's going to call the right-wing evangelicals? First of all, can we just admit that evangelical is a dumb word?
Every time you say it out loud, I'm like, that is a dumb word. I agree.
It's also hard to say.
Yeah, it is. But it's like it became shorthand for like the deconstructionists, the people who like were evangelical Christians and now they've left the church and sort of are, you know, either post-Christian or, you know, outside the context of the church. Some of them perhaps have left the faith and others would have just sort of like left institutional Christianity. But it became a word. I don't know. When did you start hearing this word, Chris? Evangelical. When did people start using that phrase?
I think a year to two years ago.
Oh, wow. That recently.
I mean, as far as like being prominent, maybe it was before that, but.
I like what Jake says in this article. I can recall a time when publishers were snapping up every talented and jaded evangelical they could find to write a memoir. That's kind of how this started was there was all these books of like, evangelicalism is terrible. Let me tell you my story. And so that kind of, there's almost like a, in the publishing scene, there was sort of this spate of memoirs and, you know, experiences of bad experiences with the church that sort of got published. And then of course there was blogs and, you know, all that went online in various ways.
So classic literature reference here, Gulliver's Travels.
Yep.
You guys. So one of the satire.
You looked at me and I didn't.
I was like, you were like, of course.
You gotta look at Bob when you say that.
Yeah. So satire. But on one of Gulliver's Travels, he becomes he's really small. And so one place he goes, he's very tall. And so as a very small person, he gets a very up close look at the human anatomy. And it's very grotesque. When you look at something that close, you're going to find the grotesque aspects of it. And every time I come across like kind of a memoir of a subculture, or especially within evangelicalism, I think of that because what is it? It's like, I'm going to put you like really up close to a subculture.
Grotesque.
And it's going to look weird because when you do that, you get that close into a subculture, you're going to see things that are off-putting and sometimes even very sinful. And so it's not surprising that this happens when you get like that up close and personal. I think the problem is we lose perspective. Just like, you know, you exaggerate the closeness, you exaggerate kind of what's happening. And so, I don't know. That's just a comment that even when I read this again, I was like, Gulliver's Travels again.
Gulliver's Travels, Exvangelical Memoirs.
There you go.
So you probably have people in your life, if you are a Christian or you're a part of a church, you probably know some folks, friends, family members, former people in your small group who kind of fall in this category of they've abandoned, if not Jesus, then at least identification with the people of Jesus. They're kind of disenfranchised, disconnected, and that's this category of ex-evangelical, to use that terrible word once again.
I have a neighbor like that. Yeah. Where he would say, like, I don't really have a problem with Jesus. It's Christians that I'm a little leery of. Mm. Meaning me. He's leery of me.
And you're
like,
a pastor.
And we just talk about it.
Yeah, you're a pastor. You're kind of intimidating that way to the average neighbor, I would imagine. You're a real Christian.
Yeah, I'm serious.
You do this for real. So Jake Meter points out that the first wave of ex-evangelicals, that sort of the memoirs in the mid-20-teens, you know, basically, I sort of connected this to, like, I think it's all connected to the Trump phenomenon as well. You sort of saw, like, from 2015 to 2020, there was sort of like, man, so many people were like, you know, I can't be a Christian anymore because there's people in my small group that voted for Donald Trump. It was stuff like that. That's just like, okay, maybe you could just have a conversation with those people. And, you know, maybe it's actually not that they've abandoned Jesus. Mm-hmm. Maybe they just have a different political leaning. So, but he says that early movement was what he would call sort of left ex-evangelicals, meaning that what these people were sort of, they were concerned about things like Donald Trump and tended to be very social justice minded, tended to probably be a little more progressive leaning in their ideology and their thinking. And so they essentially wanted to dispense with the church, but keep the teaching and the ethic of Jesus, you know, sort of like, hey, we like the Sermon on the Mount. We like the person of Jesus. We're just not sure we want the evangelical church with all its trappings and all that comes with that. Reading now from the article, Jake Meter writes, with the left ex-evangelicals, the beginning is an over-identification of wokeness with the moral teachings of Scripture concerning the preferential option for the poor, the place of women in redemptive history, the nature of property rights, and so on. Once wokeness is presupposed to basically be a shorthand for Christian moral norms concerning the marginalized, the next several steps become fairly straightforward. The church itself is actually hostile to the teachings of Jesus and needs to be exposed for its corruption and abuse, and rejected as an organ of social belonging. But once that move is made, it is hard to keep Christianity around for very long. So the next step comes when what they say of the church is now applied to Christianity. I think that's a pretty fair treatment, that they start by sort of rejecting the church, but what ends up happening for most of these people is they just go full on rejecting the faith. Now, what he acknowledges is, so more recently, you're seeing the same thing happen, but more on the political right. And this is what Jake Meter wants to call the right exvangelicals. So he says you have left exvangelicals that leave as sort of like a rebuke to the church's lack of sort of social awareness and engagement with the poor and marginalized. And then you have this sort of right-wing trend that's a little different. He says the right exvangelical parallel follows a similar line, but it begins with an absolutized condemnation of wokeness, which also tacitly repudiates many Christian ideas about the vulnerable. Once that has happened, the way of Jesus begins to look rather dangerous and hostile to the agenda of greatness and personal exaltation now ascendant on the right. And with time, what is said about specific Christian ideas will start to be applied to Christianity itself. Indeed, one of the surprising conclusions in The Great De-Churching, referencing there the book that came out 2 years ago, is that there are more people who de-church into a kind of right-wing political religion than to a left-wing political religion. If the left can attack Christianity for being an enemy of justice and equity, the right can just as easily attack Christianity as being slave morality that suppresses human innovation and excellence. And so that's an interesting observation that Meter's just observing there's sort of a new trend of people dispensing with evangelical Christianity, but wanting to hang on to this sort of right version of solidarity and, you know, a vision of the nation and maybe a vision of glory and greatness, but without the call of Jesus to humility and selflessness and those kinds of things, which to follow Nietzsche, you know, Nietzsche's logic was that Christianity was a weak religion because it exalted humility. And after all, you can't do that or you'll just get trampled on in the world. So Nietzsche didn't like Jesus because Jesus liked humility. And this sort of follows that same trajectory. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts, Chris?
Yeah, and there's echoes of this in Western history too. I mean, I think it's, you know, you can get into the debate, was Hitler a man of the right or the left, and, you know, Mussolini and those guys. But the fact is that they used Christianity much in this way, where it became, hey, as much as Christianity can be used to sort of champion the cause, the glory, the thing, the solidarity that we're after, then let's use that version of Christianity and dispense with, you know, the cross. And, you know, this is what Bonhoeffer was fighting against as well. So this isn't, in some ways, this is maybe new to our cultural context, but there's versions of this that I think have existed in Western history before.
Do you think it's fair to say that both of these things tend to be amplified on social media? Meaning, I think both left and right versions of this, they tend to sort of find one another online, but yeah. I don't know any like small groups full of people who are this way. You know, it's like they don't connect together in community as much as it's sort of this disembodied community.
Yeah,
of there's a bunch of people who are like left wingy and a bunch of people who are right wingy, but I tend to encounter that more in sort of online spaces than in any defined community.
Yeah, because even going back to the Great De-Churching, like a lot of what they wrote is what is the cause of a lot of people sort of moving away from the church and eventually sort of deconstructing, if you can call it that, is less about, hey, this conscious like rejection of XYZ and more just, I'm kind of drifting from the church. And I think you experience more of that, but then what do they end up drifting into is maybe more of some of this, not necessarily the hostile form of this or the outspoken form of this, but just sort of the adoption of, hey, this is my life. I mean, I have a political stance. I care about that kind of stuff. And it ends up being more than I'm devoted to Christ, devoted to, you know, church community. So how people kind of get there, I think, is like what you're saying. Like there's the kind of the loud version of this on social media, but there's probably other ways people maybe just find themselves there, not necessarily consciously choosing that, but just kind of drift there.
I think it feels to me that politics has become a replacement for religion. And so what you see on both the left and the right is people who might still claim sort of an affinity with Christianity, but really the thing they're most committed to is a political vision, either sort of a social justice vision or a right nationalist populist kind of vision. to say it way too simply, you know, the very pro-Trump or the very anti-Trump sort of people, but that those things become primary to them, where it's like, those are my people. It's not my people are Christians. It's my people are the pro-Trump people or the anti-Trump people or the, you know, the people who see the political situation the same way I do.
Yeah.
Do you think that Christians have always been this political, or do you think the church was at this real vulnerable, weak spot, and that's why we have this strong left and strong right all of a sudden, and not like a deep, rich Christian orthodoxy in the church?
I think you always had, I mean, people are political.
Right.
People are political animals. What I think has changed is politics has taken on a religious fervor. Mm-hmm. This to me is kind of related to the great dechurching idea and just the whole idea of disenchantment or, you know, de-Christianization, that when you take transcendence out of a culture, you replace it with something. And for some people, the most transcendent, the thing they choose to care the most about is the political order. That takes on a valence or a seriousness that is a replacement for religion. And so I guess I would say it's not that the church has become more political, it's that politics has become more and more a replacement for religion.
Yeah, sure.
And to your previous point too, and we've talked about this before on the podcast, is if you think of like institutions or kind of mediating kind of communities that we can exist in, whether it be social, you know, old social clubs or church community or, you know, whatever kind of groups that you can be a part of that have kind of mixed people with mixed politics, and you know them personally. And so those personal relationships kind of mediate maybe the political differences and keep you from becoming like extreme. But because those kinds of spaces have broken down and people have kind of retreated to the extreme, and then online, you get these loud versions of this, but it's like, hey, if I was just interacting with my neighbors or if I was connected to community outside of online and I had these political differences, maybe I wouldn't be so like adamant about it. We wouldn't be fighting about this. And so I think even the ex-evangelical kind of experience and kind of how this is found online is because there's no mediation of it. It's just, it just feels very extreme. Like, you know, how many people do I know that are this political in my church community? I mean, I know there are some, but it's helpful that they're around a group of other people that kind of helps them put that in perspective. And so, yeah, there's disagreements and there's wrestles with that. And we've had this where people in gospel community, they're like, I don't know if I can be in GC because of this. And then, but then you start to work through that and there's other considerations where if you strip all that away, that's all there is with this stuff, and whether right or left. And that's where it becomes kind of that extreme vocalness that you see online.
Let me read you Jake's conclusion, because I think he highlights exactly what you just said, Chris. The most important response we can have to these trends is to rededicate ourselves to the basics of Christian faith and piety. Adopt a rich habit of Bible reading and personal prayer. Deepen your understanding of the Apostles' Creed, Lord's Prayer, and the Decalogue. Go to church. Receive the Eucharist. Submit yourself to the teachings of Scripture and the loving guidance of the church. These are not simple times, but if we are not doing the relatively simple and obvious things, I see little hope for us as we navigate the complex. And I think that's, you know, basically what he's saying is like, hey, just do the basic Christian things. And to me, this is such a, for our listeners, you need to hear this as a solution to so many things.
Yeah.
So many of the places where we tend to get pulled into tribalism, self-love, fretting and anxiety and concern over politics or over some social issue, that all starts when we're decentering the Word of God and the people of God in our lives and becoming agitated by other things. And so I think there is this beautiful groundedness that comes through being in a flesh and blood local church, Chris, like you said, that, yeah, I got to interact with people who think differently than me. And that forces me to ask, like, how big a deal are these convictions, or are they secondary to the fact that I'm a follower of the Lord Jesus Christ? And there's just a beautiful way that worship and Christian community puts all these things in their proper perspective.
Yeah. And for both of these, kind of the left version and the right version, where they start is not Christ. Mm. It's not the gospel. It starts somewhere else and then tries to pull Jesus
into that. Say more about that.
Well, I mean, in the article, he talks about kind of on the left, they're more, it's kind of this, the foundational driving central ethic is kind of a social justice.
Yep.
And then on the right, it's this anti-wokeness or this glory of the community of the nation or whatever it is. But both of those things, it's not starting with Jesus, the person of Jesus and the gospel. And so I think it's important also for Christians, if you're feeling some of this tension, even in your own soul, where there's this kind of reactionary, and both of them are, they're reactionary kind of impulses, that it's kind of this recentering on Christ and the gospel to kind of, you know, put these other things in perspective. And not to say that there aren't elements of truth in these concerns, like the social justice and the anti-woke stuff, but those things have to be mediated through the person of Jesus. Like, he's king, not these agendas. And so I think that's the other piece of, as much as these two things can be in competition with each other and fight each other, they're very similar. Like, they're kind of two sides of the same coin.
The other thing that I've seen that's concerning to me is that on both the left and the right, people get inoculated against the kinds of things you just said. Because they're, in a sense, the online communities here are sort of radicalized. Yeah. And so, you know, like Jake posts a screenshot from Twitter at the beginning. The graphic for this article is a screenshot from a Twitter account. And the person is saying, if your pastor tells you on Sunday, we need to weep with those who weep, you need to find a new church. Now, just a reminder, weep with those who weep is in the Bible.
Yeah.
Like, if your pastor's preaching on that verse, he's doing his job.
Yeah.
But this person is telling, if you go to a church and your pastor says, weep with those who weep, you need to find a new church. And the point there is that there becomes this, in very online communities on both the left and the right, something as basic and simple, like you said, Chris, of like, hey, Jesus is king. You know, not these secondary concerns. And so the question is like, are we building our lives around Jesus? There are people online who will tell you, yeah, don't let your pastor say that to you. He's just trying to put the focus. He's trying to take the focus off what really matters.
Yeah.
And that's like a squishy way of getting us to all orient around Jesus and basically say, like, let's just go down the middle and not have convictions about something like, you know, the presidency or foreign policy or whatever. And because there are people saying that on both the left and the right, you might say that as a pastor to a person in your church and they hear you say that and they're like, oh yeah, you're just being squishy, Chris.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so there's a way that, I mean, I know this because I've had personal conversations, yeah, Dusty, with people, right, in our church where I have said, hey, I know you really care a lot about politics. That's not what gospel community is about. So as your pastor, I'm asking you not to talk about that in gospel community. And they like react as though I'm asking,
viscerally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As though I'm asking them to like, hey, why don't you talk more about Joseph Smith and less about Jesus? You know, like, as though I'm asking them to give up something actually central to, yeah, their religion.
Yeah.
And it's just fascinating to me that I've encountering more and more people that their convictions about various political agendas are so closely held that the way one guy said it to me is like, well, if I can't talk about that, I'm not being real. And I'm saying, no, yeah, you can actually still be real. Just, you don't need to bring that up in this, yeah, 1 hour and hour and a half meeting.
Yeah.
Like, you can still talk about it with your friends. You can have dinner with a friend and be like, hey man, can I talk with you about politics? But just, that's not what this is for.
Well, yeah, and talk about it in a real way in which you realize that it is the center of your universe. And so therefore you need to get it removed from the center so that Jesus could be the center.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think this is one of the things, Bob, that I'm burdened for people in churches, and think just how they engage this and how that then they start to filter what their pastor is saying,
right,
through this lens, where especially if you like have been in a church for a long time and you know your pastor and you know his heart and he's got a track record of faithful teaching for years and years and years. And then now all of a sudden what he says has just been, it's just switched because of what you've heard online. And it's like, hey, maybe there's something wrong with that. If all of a sudden your pastor is all of a sudden, you've never thought he's squishy in the past. And now all of a sudden he's squishy and you're like, hey, maybe the problem isn't him.
Mm.
And so I know that this is something that can happen and so I think, you know, as our listeners, just be careful of that. If you find your perception of what your pastor is saying changing, and it's not because what he's saying is different, then maybe there's something kind of that's feeding your understanding that you need to check.
I am actually sort of pleased by the backlash against wokeness that we've seen in the last 6 to 12 months.
Oh, yeah.
Because it has helped correct some of that on the left side of the spectrum in our church.
Mm-hmm.
Because we, you know, I have had people I love in our church who, you know, if we're not talking enough about whatever the flavor of the month is for their concern, right, socially, or when it comes to politics or whatever, that you know, that's they're starting to agitate and say, like, we don't care enough about this. You're not saying enough about this. You guys aren't talking enough about this. And my response to them was like, I'm talking about it just as much as I was 10 years ago. Like,
yeah.
What's different is youth. You're hearing more about it out there.
Yeah.
And therefore you're convinced we should be talking about it more in here. But I would just say, like, but I'm not sure I agree with you on that. Like, is that okay?
Yeah.
Cause I'm not convinced that just because it's front and center in every conversation on social media, that it should be front and center in our church. And for some of those people, that was enough for them to say, like, yeah, I'm not sure I can go to church here, you know, which is sad. Cause to me, I'm trying to say, yeah, I don't not care about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think I'm not going to fit it into the sermon next week just because you think I should.
Yeah.
I am going to pray and weigh, are we saying enough about that to disciple God's people on that issue? You know, is there more we should be saying or less we should be saying? So in some ways the correction against some of that very strong wokeness has been a blessing to me, because I feel like, okay, that's kind of what I felt, was like there was a high emphasis on some things that shouldn't have been. But now I fear the same thing happening in the other direction, where it's like now you're going to have sort of that, some of the same things of like, you know, if we're not talking about this issue that's more of a right-leaning issue, then we're not, you know, then we're squishy.
Yeah.
We're not doing the faithful work of disciple making.
Yeah, we're starting a series in Luke, and as, you know, kind of prepping for that and kind of get my head around some of the themes of Luke, reading this and thinking, okay, a major theme in Luke is this, you know, the kingdom of God and how it is counterintuitive, how it is kind of upside down kingdom. It's a reversal. Like it's the kind of thing that would drive Nietzsche nuts. Like, as far as like, mm-hmm. Hey, who is in the kingdom? It's the humble, it's the weak, it's the poor.
It's the outcasts.
It's the outcasts. And so I'm already kind of in my head, I'm like, okay, if I start preaching this, how is this going to be heard in our current political climate? Of like, hey, is this trying to undermine, you know, some kind of, you know, political agenda, mm-hmm. that, you know, hey, we're trying to make America great again or something. Right. Is that how people are going to hear this?
How are we like, going to be great if we're all weak and humble?
Yeah, I'm just like, I'm trying to preach the Bible, you know? And I think this is also one of the fun things about, or one of the, you know, fun defenses of preaching expository is like, hey, I'm cherry picking the verses. Like, this is the text. This is the next thing that came in the order. So when I get to the Sermon on the Mount, like, you can't say that I'm trying to just poke at something or come up with something. It's like, no, that's just in the text. So I I'm not, you know, I'm very thankful for the people of First City Church, and this has been a very minimal type thing, but it's still a reality. It's still something that it was kind of coming into my mind as I'm kind of prepping of, man, this just does not fit into and Jesus's agenda does not fit into a MAGA agenda. Mm. And I mean, just to be honest about that. Now, it doesn't say that he fits into a woke agenda at all either, but it just, hey, the gospel subverts the kingdom of this world, and that's just the reality of it.
Yeah. Make the upside down kingdom great again.
There you go.
Is your sermon
what,
title.
Yeah, let's preach the gospel of Luke and do that.
Yeah.
For listeners, I want this podcast to accomplish two things for you. Number one, to warn you about these tendencies in your own heart. And two, to help you relate to people in your small group or in your family or in your church committee who might be sort of prone to either left wing or right wing sort of evangelical trajectories, you know, to sort of move away from the church out of a commitment to a certain kind of social agenda. And I think we need to be aware of those things. I'm thankful for thinkers like Jake Meter who will write a piece like this and just say, hey, here's a thing we should talk about within the church. I have said and will say again, I don't even love the term evangelical. So, you know, I don't even want to claim that for myself. I don't know that that word does us a whole lot of good. But again, I'm not the one that gets to define all the conversations in the culture. And so as much as I hate both the word evangelical and the word exvangelical, here we are talking about it. And I hope it helps you have a little bit of a framework for what it means for us to be the faithful people of Jesus in the midst of a culture very agitated about politics and prone to invest a certain amount of religiosity in our political convictions. I want to end this podcast by reading a quote from C.S. Lewis that Jake Meter quotes in this article. And I think it's really a great reminder. It's from the Screwtape Letters. So keep in mind, this quote is a demon talking to another demon. Okay. Whenever I quote the Screwtape Letters, I have to make sure people understand what it is. Context. Otherwise, it's really going to mess with you. Lewis has one demon write to another this: "The real trouble about the set your patient is living in is that it is merely Christian. They all have individual interests, of course, but the bond remains mere Christianity. What we want, if men become Christians at all, is to keep them in a state of mind I call Christianity and. You know, Christianity and the crisis, Christianity and the new psychology, Christianity and the new order, Christianity and faith healing, Christianity and psychological research, Christianity and vegetarianism, Christianity and spelling reform. If they must be Christians, let them at least be Christians with a difference. Substitute for the faith itself some fashion with a Christian coloring." What a great way of stating the danger. Let us not be people who embrace some fashion with a Christian coloring, whether that fashion is a left-leaning fashion or a right-leaning fashion. Rather, let us be people who embrace Christianity itself. And as Lewis so famously said, mere Christianity.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own churches for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or a church leader in another context, thanks for listening in. And we pray that this conversation might be helpful to you as you minister in your context. We always love to hear from listeners, so if you have thoughts, questions, future podcast topics, send an email to podcast@cdomaha.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time for another episode of the Wednesday Conversation.